Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight, we have actor Michael Rapaport and writers directors Hal Haberman and Jeremy Passmore talking all about their new film, Special. Actor Louis Lombardi discusses his new film, Doughboys, which he also writes, produces, and directs. And none other than Jason O'Brien will stop by to speculate on the upcoming Oscar season. It is all coming up next on Movie Geeks United. Everybody, it's Movie Geeks United. How's everyone out there doing? I'm Jamie.
I'm Jerry.
And we're the Movie Geeks.
We're the Movie Geeks. We're the guys who make this happen twice a week for you, almost every week of the year.
That's right. We're the ones without a life. That's well,
actually, we both actually do have lives, believe it or not. We do actually have lives, believe it or not.
But we work them in around the show.
Yeah, we do.
This is your Movie Geek show on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. We got a great show for you. Two incredible actors, incredible credits to both of their names. Looking through Michael Rapaport and Louis Lombardi, man,
my
one
favorite
credit.
They each have a movie that they're in that I like a lot. Like for Michael Rapaport, it's Kicked in the Head. And for Louis Lombardi, it's actually a movie called Amongst Friends. And
yeah.
They're both, like, favorites of mine from the 90s that I always go back to whenever they're, like, on TV. And they're both very good. And I love Louis, like, in everything he's in. And Michael Rapaport just always amazes me.
Well, look at this. I mean, this guy, Mr. Lombardi, he's in a lot of films. The upcoming The Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Rapaport's been in a ton of movies. Worked
Higher Learning.
Spike Lee, John Singleton,
yeah.
Woody Allen. I mean, on and on.
He was
on.
Great in the Woody Allen film. He's hysterical in that.
Yeah, he's terrific. And they've both made great impressions on TV. If
mm-hmm.
you think about Lombardi, 24.
Mm-hmm. Anger.
Great, great role in 24, yeah. And The Sopranos.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mr. Rapaport, Prison Break is his latest recurring role that... You know, that's a huge show, and he's had his own show, The War at Home, I believe.
Right.
Some first-time actors here. Not first-time actors. Some first-rate.
First-rate, yeah. And
yes,
as Rob
yes.
pointed out, Michael Rapaport, as Dick Ritchie in True Romance, one of the great roles, one of
exactly.
the great films of the 90s,
yeah.
without a doubt.
Yeah. So we will welcome Mr. Lombardi on in about 15 or so minutes, and then we'll... welcome on Mr. Rapaport, and then we'll welcome on Mr. O'Brien. What a packed show.
Dude, he gets, like, Jason O'Brien's just, like, you know, Blog Talk Radio God. He gets, like, top, you know, the last slot, you know?
Yeah, we save the worst for last. I'm sorry, did I say that out loud?
You said that out loud, man. You're so conscious speaking out loud.
Now, let me tell you, folks out there, we had a great show on Sunday. It was the second part of our Steven Spielberg tribute. Our first show, we paid tribute to Jaws, and this time we looked back at E.T., and we all had a good cry, and I
cried like hell after we played that last part.
I know, man. I was tearing up. I was like, God, I got to end the show now. But those were great shows and great guests. Alan Davia, the cinematographer, Joseph McBride, with some real jewels of information about
mm-hmm.
Mr. Spielberg. Great shows, so if you're interested in and that kind of thing. That's our show list past Sunday. All right, guys, everyone in the chat room, thank you for joining us, and everyone out there listening live and on replay, of course. If you're listening live and you aren't in the chat room, click chat available on the homepage there where you are, and you will be directed to a crazy place where movie fans converse and argue and joke and kid and sexually harass one another. It's a great time.
Speaking of sexually harassed, Jason O'Brien's just entered the chat room.
Yeah, perfect intro.
I couldn't do it better.
We didn't talk about something last week, obviously, because we had a theme show. But that's the new Bond picture, and you went and checked it out. If I wanted to check it out, I would have just sat at home and watched the previous 30 Bond films. But you actually went to the theater to see this new one, and what were your thoughts?
My thoughts are, I like it. I know it's not very popular. I like it. Now, I have to say that I do have some problems with it, minor problems, but not enough to, like, discourage me from liking the film. I will be up front. It's not as good as Casino Royale. It's not. It's just, and I don't think much could follow that film now, but it seems like they have swung the pendulum so far in the opposite direction of Roger Moore and Pierce Brosnan. They've gone to really what Bond, you know, they all complain that it's not the old Bond. It is the old Bond, but it's the old Bond of the Ian Fleming books. That dark, you know, brooding character, very, you know, manic, you know, all this verges on depression in parts. As Daniel Craig said in an interview not too long ago, like, if you really got to know Bond, you know, he's a real downer.
He certainly is the way he's been.
This is a very pulpy James Bond. I don't want to say emo. I don't think that's correct. But that has been a term that's been thrown around.
Which one?
Emo. Emo, as in.
Oh.
As in.
Finding
Nemo? With
as
this,
an Emo Phillips, the comedian?
Yeah, I was thinking that, dude. It's really weird. I was thinking Emo Phillips, too. I don't think that's accurate. I think what has happened is you have a man here who's lost, you know, someone he loved and felt betrayed by. She was murdered. And, you know, he's trying. Part of this movie is him finding out who was behind this. And also this organization that we learn, you know, we learn more and more about. You could make an argument that this film is really an extended third act of Casino Royale.
Right. And gosh, I sure was begging for that.
Yeah, I know you and Chris are not fans of Casino Royale, but there's another thing that with these two films, you know, it used to be James Bond was the trendsetter. Mm-hmm. Those films, everyone, like the Die Hard films, everything was influenced by them. This one is the first time, really, that the film is really influenced by the Bourne movies, especially the two directed by Paul Greengrass.
Right.
I mean, this, if you didn't know any better, you would think this is parts of this are the Bourne ultimatum. But I still like it. I don't have the problems with it a lot of people do. I think it's a good film. I don't think it's like in the same league as the previous one. But I do think for the next one, they are going to have. There needs to be a little bit of humor,
right?
Just a little bit. They need to go since he's gotten this out of his system now. This part of the story, I think they can add a little bit of humor. I'm not saying go back to like total like cheese fest like Roger Moore, but they can definitely Daniel Craig can definitely deliver some humor.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know that he has it in him, and I don't know that.
Oh, he does.
You can switch midstream, you know, when you're playing it so serious these past two Bonds.
Mm-hmm.
I think, speaking of Finding Nemo, I think the next Bond movie, they should give it to Pixar. And, I mean, that'll something for the kids. I think that'll be good.
Didn't they do that a couple years ago? There was like a spy movie. Well, not just Spy Kids, but there was Agent Cody Banks or something.
Right. You should cast Frankie Muniz. Up as the young Bond, 007, and he will go under Bond's wing. That'll be good. I think that'll be good.
Yeah, but
put a talking toy in there. That'll be good.
A talking toy. There you go. Get the marketing in there. Cross-merchandising.
Yeah. I mentioned Pixar really because I finally got to see WALL-E this weekend.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and man, everything that everyone has said is true. It's very good. It's a nice movie of tremendous imagination.
These
films are so tremendously imaginative. And I watched it with a bunch of kids. And as a rule, I don't really enjoy children. But, I was sitting with this group of kids, and they were enthralled, especially for a movie that practically for the first half hour, at least, it works as a silent film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Your two lead characters only say two words, essentially. They were enthralled. And it was very, very nice to see them enjoy it as much as they did.
No.
It's a very good movie.
Oh,
and,
it's an excellent movie.
Yeah. It's got a lot of heart.
Now, let me ask you,
Were
you enthralled, though?
I was. You know, the previous weekend I'd gone to Disney, and I was like, you know, I'm not of the age to find this magical anymore.
Right, right.
And then I saw WALL-E last weekend. I was enthralled. I enjoyed myself. You know,
I really got into it, and I like the Pixar films. Like, I love The Incredibles. I love Ratatouille and Finding Nemo.
I love The Incredibles, too. Yeah.
I really got it. I was really surprised how into this I was. I do think this is a Best Picture contender. I really do.
I
don't have a problem with that.
Jason, I'm sure he'll say something about it. Jason mentioned it on his show the other night that his opinion, and I agree, and I'm sure you will too. The reason why they've come up with Best Animated Feature is essentially that'll take it out of the market for Best Picture, Best Regular Picture, because And I think that WALL-E has Best Animated Picture by a landslide.
Oh, yes, it does.
Yeah, that's not even a question. Pixar owns that category as long as they
as long as they have a picture that's released that year, I think it's a shoo-in that they've won it.
Everyone is encouraged that I'm man enough to admit that I enjoyed WALL-E. I thought they should have cast like Gomer Pyle in it, so just one time he could say, "Well, WALL-E." I think that would have been great.
There's a name I have not heard in a long time. Gomer Pyle. Oh, my.
And Chris,
we should do a Jim Neighbors tribute show.
Yeah. Crispy is from the Disney area. Yeah. I'm so sorry. But I was in your neck of the woods the other week. I'm sorry I didn't look you up, but I was about to pass out among all the 500-pound scantily clad women in wheelchairs there. So.
Jesus Christ. Oh my God! Yes,
well,
it's
something. It's not that they're not disabled. I would never make fun of someone that was disabled. It's just that they're of a certain weight, I'm of a certain weight too. It hurt me to really hurt to walk those three parks that one day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, enough of my confessions.
Yeah, I mean, we were only 13 minutes into the show, and we've already
offended now.
We've already gotten so much into those 13 minutes. Oh, my.
I'm sorry.
So we are going to have our good friend Jason O'Brien on to talk about the what he thinks the Oscar race is going to look like, and he is in the chat room racing hell right now.
Yeah, that's your music, Jason. It's just for you.
Do we know who's hosting this year yet, or?
Isn't Jason hosting this year?
Jason's hosting?
I
hope he let us crash the green room then.
They haven't announced. I thought that was awfully odd because they've announced the musical director just this past week with Michael Giacchino, who's hot right now
in
composer terms.
He
is. Upcoming Star Trek theme. He did the music for the upcoming Star Trek film. And a bunch of others, Mission Impossible 3, and on and on and on. He's the brother of Anthony Giacchino, and that was our very first guest on the show.
Yes, it was. A very good, very, very important film, and a very good film, too.
Isn't that great?
Mm-hmm. I mean, we have Giacchino, yeah.
I'm in a certain mood tonight. I don't know. Let's take this call real quick. We're expecting Mr. Lombardi to call in the next 5 minutes, so let's take this call real quick. This is Rabble Rouser. You're on. Rabble Rouser, start rousing.
Rabble Rouser, are you there?
All right. Not
CBR
very roused.
CBR Street Gang.
Oh, he's just listening. Okay.
Oh,
you're
okay.
On the line. Just
okay.
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 Well, okay.
All right. Well, there we go.
I thought I was going to get a rouse from him tonight, or at least a little rabble. I mean, come on.
You are in a mood tonight.
Rabble
oh
and babble.
Spike the Kool-Aid.
I want rabble to babble tonight. We got 4 minutes to film.
We got 4 minutes. Okay, well, speaking, you had mentioned the Star. What have you seen the trailer for the Star Trek film?
I did.
What are your thoughts? I mean,
no. I'm sorry. I'm eating nuts as I'm talking to you.
You're eating nuts. Okay.
The almond variety, just in case you're curious.
Yeah,
I think that the Star Trek films don't interest me, and I'm encouraged to know that they don't interest J.J. Abrams either.
Well, I think that's very interesting. I think he's what he's done. If you wanted someone to re-energize the thing, he's the person to do it. I actually like what he's done here.
Yeah, but the question is, will Star Trek, will Trekkies embrace it, or will they resent it?
So far, they are cautiously embracing it.
Yeah.
I have to say, I like the original series. As I've gotten older, I must say I'm not too crazy about the things that follow, and I like the first couple of films, especially, but. I think, obviously, this begins, I guess Batman Begins, then Casino Royale, this idea of rebooting, going back, starting over, resetting.
Right.
And I think for this particular franchise, which was dying the last couple of movies that were just really chores to sit through, which just felt like almost extended episodes, I think this going, this starting over with this one is... I think it could work. I got to say, from watching the trailer, I'm kind of excited.
He says, Rabble Rouser says that it's like Taxi Driver meets Falling Down meets Trek 182 with humor. I thought Taxi Driver was hysterical, personally.
I think he's got a point there. I like that. I like that
Trek 182, man.
Yeah, I mean, there you go.
Oh, no, he's talking about the movie Noise. Well, that's the
Tim Robbins. Noise, the one with Tim Robbins?
Yeah. About noise pollution, which is funny because I think noise pollution every time I hear Robbins talk on Bill Maher's show. So,
ooh.
I'm kidding. I like Tim Robbins.
Yeah, we all like Tim Robbins. Wow,
easy joke. Easy joke. Yeah. So Star Trek, I could take it or leave it, but I've been to conventions before.
I've never been to anything like that.
Yeah, years ago. Coppola was doing Dracula, or he did Dracula, and he was promoting it months before its opening. There was a Comic-Con event nearby. So I went because I would have a chance to meet Coppola, which I did.
Cool.
But at that convention, obviously, there were a boatload of Trekkies, and they were adults dressed in full regalia,
mm-hmm.
full makeup, and it was just fascinating. There's something... I don't mean to alienate anyone out there, but there's something missing from their lives.
Did you ever see the documentary Trekkies?
No, I never did get to see that. No.
Okay, I watch it because you'll actually sort of, you might retract that statement because that is the thing they have in their lives, and it gives them
It
gives them
a sense
of community, the sense of belonging.
When you're missing something from your life, you fill it in other ways.
Right.
And I thought that's what I meant by that.
Okay, okay. You know, I see what you're saying. I remember I was talking to a guy I saw this, 9 or 10 years ago, talking to someone about it at work, and he was just said, I'm happy they have something to look forward to in life.
It's true of all of us. I mean, I write and I watch movies that fills some kind of void in me.
Right.
You do steroids. It's all
I
the
do steroids.
Same
yeah, I do
thing.
Steroids. And I have imaginary conversations with Christopher Hitchens. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, let me take Chris B's call real quick until Mr. Lombardi comes online. Chris B, you're on the air. Chris B.
Chris B.
What's going on with the lines tonight?
I don't know.
Rabble Rouser, hang on. I got to unmute you for. Rabble Rouser, you're on the air.
Hello. Hey, how you doing?
Hey
Rabble.
Hey, so you're talking about Trekkies. I just got a funny story to relay. I was at the local video store here last night checking out some movies, and one of the guys that works there is kind of one of those clingy guys that once you start talking to him about movies of any sort, he'll follow you around the store nonstop, relaying you all of his life stories.
I wasn't at the video store last night.
I wasn't there, but I never did that. I like to stay. I just always keep my opinions to myself in public, you know.
Right. Well, this guy seems to have found a friend, and that's fine. So he's telling us I pick up a box for a new documentary about what they call LARPers or LARPs, live action role players, like kind of what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And
oh wait,
guy,
are you talking about Darkon?
It may have been. I don't know what the film was. I think it was the one about people who dress up like Lord of the Rings.
I think it's Darkon. I think I'm not sure.
So in with a serious face, this guy says, "Yeah, I really don't like watching those films because I find them to be a bit condescending."
Oh shit!
How could you possibly make a documentary about live action role players that doesn't come off condescending?
I agree. Speaking of condescending, I hate to be condescending, but our guest is on the line, so we're going to let you go.
My computer keeps shutting out, so I'm going to listen on through the phone. If you can leave me on without, you can mute me if you want, but I won't keep.
No, please do, my friend. I appreciate
you
calling in
much.
And listening in tonight. Bye bye, rabble rouser.
Bye bye.
Everyone's a rabble rouser who listens in on this show. Our
and
first guest is on the. Yeah, yeah. Fit right in. Our first guest is on the line, and we couldn't be more thrilled to have him on the show tonight. Louis Lombardi is an exceptional actor with a terrific string of credits. Just listen to some of these. Natural Born Killers, Suicide Kings, The Usual Suspects, Confidence, Wonderland, and the upcoming film The Spirit. On TV, he's made an unforgettable impression as Edgar in 24 and Skip in The Sopranos, and he's an actor of tremendous heart and sincerity. And those are the same qualities he brings to the table as director, producer, writer, and editor of Doughboys, which is now available on DVD. Here is part of the trailer for this film.
My first memories were working in my family's bakery. It was all I knew and all I cared to know. Frank was the same way. At the time, we were inseparable. He was working, I was working. As time went on, things changed. We never want the personal business to interfere with family business. Pop always told us to stick together, and the shop would always be here if we wanted it. I told you I like to gamble, right?
Time has run out. I've waited long enough, Louis. You got until 8 o'clock tonight to come up with the money you owe me. And that little shop of yours should pretty much take care of everything.
It's nice to want things, right?
Welcome to the show, Mr. Louis Lombardi. Mr. Lombardi, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Hey, how are you doing, sir?
Good. How's it going?
Great. I appreciate you joining us tonight very much. I'm excited about this film and discussing it with you. Something's always struck me, though. You are a face that everyone recognizes. You've been in so many great films and TV series. Could you tell me a little bit about what made you decide you wanted to become an actor? Was that an unlikely profession for you, or how did you fall into it?
You know, since I've been like 12 years old, that's all I've ever like known or wanted to know to do. I know it sounds crazy, and I never really
not at
I
all.
Really,
yeah.
You know, and that you know, I have headshots when I was 12, 13, and I used to go just you know I used to go to when I was really young. I didn't go to school, which I'm not saying is a great thing, but I didn't go to any school. Growing up in the Bronx, you just, you know, you find your way through life, you know. And
mm-hmm.
I didn't go to school. I quit it like fifth or sixth grade. And, you know, and I would go, instead of going to school, I would go to the movies. I would see Rocky, Jaws, know, and those are the movie theater times I used to go. And I used to go see these movies, and I, instead of going to school, I would go to the movies in the Bronx, in the theater. I trained to the theater instead of the school. So it turned out, you know, without realizing it, that was my education for my career. So schooling wasn't what I was going to do. It ended up with almost like it was meant to be almost for me, you know? And now when I look at that, and you know how I really learned how to act? When I started getting like 15, 16, I didn't have $30,000 a year to go to the film school.
Right.
I didn't like acting classes. I didn't like being in a classroom and somebody telling me what to do. I'm one of the hands-on type of mentalities. I need to be out there doing it. I learn, and I'll be good at it. You know, especially if I'm interested in it. You know, if I'm interested in what I'm doing. So I guess that's what happened. So I used to audition when I was younger for NYU Films in New York. You know, it's New York University. It's like, you know, the biggest film school in the world, probably, right? Scorsese came out, Oliver Stone. I mean, it goes down the list, right? And so I didn't have the education or the money to go, so I would audition for NYU Films as an actor. I would get hired and learn how to act on set instead of in a classroom for free.
Oh,
and
that's
what
great.
The biggest advantage was is I was learning how to make movies for free. This was at 15. So I used my bringing up, you know, kind of for me, you know, since I didn't grow up that, I learned how to do it in a real aggressive, real way, not in a classroom of any sort, whether it be making or acting. So I ended up learning right on set as I was doing it. And I ended up doing like 20 NYU films, you know. Yeah. And you ready for this? The first guy I ever worked for, my first NYU film, you know what his name is? Eric, I think it's Eric Birnbaum. What the hell? And he's the writer of, he did Elf. He did the Eddie Murphy movie.
Right,
he did,
right.
He's got like five movies. David Birnbaum. I'm sorry. It's terrible. I don't remember his name. But David Birnbaum. And he was my first NYU film 20 years ago was actually with him. And then, who knows, like 10 years later, 2 years ago, I just run into him. I'm like, how you doing? He's like, hey, I wrote this, you know. But it's just funny. I mean, you know, if you stay in the loop in this business long enough and you never stop and you never quit, you will be somewhat successful.
Yeah.
You know, it's the people that come in and go, yeah, you know, they get disappointed and they start to slack off, and that's when they start to do it less. I'm one of these people where I'm a 24-hour a day, 7 day a week, lifetime person in this life. It's been my life since a young kid, and that's all it's ever probably, hopefully, will ever gonna be. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you know,
yeah.
It's kind of like I learned in the real world of doing it, not in classroom. Fortunately, so now when I get out here, it's kind of like it's like being in the NFL. If you never play and you never get to play, you never really do. But if you get in there and start doing it, you learn quicker, you learn faster, and you learn in a realistic way. You know, a classroom can't teach you adversity, things that happen, things that problems. They can only teach you how to do it. They can't teach you how to solve problems.
I agree. I agree completely, and you know the theory only takes you so far that they teach in classes. You just got to get your hands dirty to find out who you are as an artist, as an actor. Yeah, and you've been in the loop, like you said, for a long time. And I'm wondering, under the directors that you've worked with, what particular lessons have you taken from watching them work that you applied to your film Doughboys?
Oh my God! You know what? I seriously have worked with Oliver Stone, who was like an idol to me when I was in New York growing up making movies. And my first real movie after this film called Amongst Friends I had did.
That's a great film.
Yeah, that was my first film. And
that's awesome. I love that film.
And you know who cast me in the movie?
Who?
Mira Sorvino.
Wow.
Okay, cool.
See how everything ties back? You know, you just, it's like if you keep doing it, and that's how she got her break, because she was a producer and a casting person on that movie. She brought me in. She brought me in. Her and Rob Weiss, cast us in the film, right?
Right.
She was auditioning all the female roles. They couldn't get the right female. I think they had, like, Daisy Fuentes. This is before anyone was anybody. And they cast her in the film, and she backed out, and it was at the last minute, so Mira knew the lines. So she ended up doing the role.
Huh.
And,
yeah, I remember that. That's a really good little film. I like that film a lot.
It's a great little film. It was about the Jewish gangsters in Long Island. Ended up turning out to be a great thing. And Mira met Robert Redford at Sundance that year because the film was a hit at Sundance.
Mm-hmm.
And boom, quiz show, and it started a whole career, you know. And, you know, Rob Weiss, the director of Among Friends.
He's Entourage,
you know, and I'm on the finale this week.
Oh, cool.
Oh yeah, because ever the boys come and go back home. The boys are back home.
I don't know anything. I'm not saying anything.
okay. Yeah, but
you know what happened? Let me tell you a quick story. I made that mistake. I don't try when it comes to the television shows. I don't talk anymore. You know why? Because 10 years ago I did this show, and it was called Sopranos. And I go to New York. I'm shooting the scenes 8 months before all this stuff airs. I'm in a bar, and I go, man, you had to say Pussy got killed today. And
oh, no.
What? People are like, what? It was so embarrassing, you know? And I was like, oh, my God, I have to watch. And I didn't realize you were in a bar, you're drinking, you're having a few laughs, and before you know it, you're talking about it. And I go, Pussy, I didn't realize it. But people didn't want to talk to me for... People,
yeah, I wouldn't want to piss off David Chase, you know. I just,
but, you know, you don't want to ruin. Wait, let me explain that. You don't want to ruin it for the fans.
No, absolutely. David. You're right. Absolutely.
The fan is the one who invests 24 episodes or 13 or whatever it may be. They invest that time into you and love you for 8 years, 5 years, 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the people you don't want to ruin it for. They are
That's
the people
right.
that make. They put me in business. They put you in business, but you wouldn't be interviewing me. You know what I'm saying? So it's like
exactly.
The public puts us in business, and I just care what they think. You know, I'm not even kidding. Well, with Doughboys, I've been learning this even more. You know?
Yeah.
So,
let's talk about Doughboys. How much of it is? I'm wondering what inspired. The project and how much of it is culminated from your actual upbringing.
The film itself?
Yeah.
Well, the film itself had a lot of real elements because growing up, that's all there was. You this, you get in trouble for this, you get in trouble for that, you get in trouble for this. You try not to get in trouble, or you don't do it. Like the father in my movie. You know, Vinny Pastore. He's one of his best roles he's ever played. When he saw it, he cried the whole movie. People look at him now in that movie. He's not what he normally plays, correct? Did you guys see the movie?
Yeah. He's fantastic.
The stereotypical. I try to bring everybody away from the stereotypes of what they really play. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I brought Mike Foreign as the police officer. You know, I brought Vinny in as the father. Well, I don't want it to be some gangster, and he's against it. If you hear throughout the whole thing, he walked with him, he would never deal with them. But that's what I try to instill. You know, it's like, I just think it was one of Vinny's best roles by far,
yeah.
And he thought the same
yeah.
thing.
He is terrific. Let me ask you about this because of the kind of neighborhood films that have been made that are part of this kind of genre. Watching those films, do you have any pet peeves from them where some of them feel not authentic, and how did you get that authenticity?
Because I grew up in that neighborhood. I grew up there. That's where I grew up and born and raised. You know,
yeah.
I grew up with every person. Put it this way, even the people in the movie besides the main actors, almost all those people in the movie are friends of mine that I grew up with. I put them in the movie. They auditioned. I went back. I love that. I love that camaraderie, family kind of feel, eating together. That's the way I grew up in the Bronx.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody together hanging out, playing sports. You know, I love that. Everybody just hanging out day and night. And when I did this movie, it was the same feel. We were in the Bronx where we grew up. Everybody from the neighborhood worked and shooting. And you know what? And it was like one of the proudest moments of my life, I have to say, because your whole life you work to do to have a dream, to go, wow, imagine I could be, you know, and growing up since I was 13, you know, you walk down and you go, wow, I can't wait to one day be shooting my movie in the neighborhood, you know? You know, growing up, you just, my mind rolls. My mind's like a movie set, 10 movies going at once. I'm always thinking 100 miles an hour. And, you know, you grow up thinking that, wow, I'd love to be, and then you're home, finally, or eventually, shooting a movie in your neighborhood with all your friends that's going to be released to millions of people.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's, you know, I just think that's like an achievement, not in like any kind of like money, just like in your own personal achievement kind of. This is, I set out to do this 25 years ago, and wow, I'm here doing it.
Well, you know, and it is a big achievement, and you can tell the film is really told from an honest place with and told with a lot of heart, and I mean, you can tell it's a passion project. I had a couple of questions for you concerning directing.
And I know that you're using some first-time actors here, and they're all wonderful. I mean, the wonderful performances in this film. I'm wondering if there was a different approach, if different demands for a first-timer than a seasoned pro like yourself or Mr. Pastore.
You know what? All of them were just as good, I have to say. But I'm one of those directors, like I said, I like who I like to be around people that I like, right? So what I do is I try to make it where when there's major scenes with actors, I like them to come in and read with me for a few days. But not like in a room sitting. I mean, let's go out for dinner. Let's go sit down. Like, you want to hang around me anyway and come play cards? We're friends. Let's go do this and get this right. So when we get – me and Vinny did that with Sopranos. We would get together once a week in the same neighborhood. We would nail those scenes in one or two takes. See, I love doing that. I love preparation. I don't like getting to a place and wasting time. Nothing frustrates me like that. I like to prepare and then hit. When you hit, and you don't have to worry about your acting or your lines, and you can focus on directing and the writing and the dialogue, whatever. It just gives more focus. And I used to, when I did Doughboys, I had every single actor come in. I don't care how big or small they had. If it was a tiny role, once or twice, just to play with them, meet them. You know, I like playing with people. I like being, you know, I'm a friendly, fun, like that kind of guy. I like talking to people. That's just my, and I grew up, you know, like being a host kind of. And you know, I like, when I'm on a set, I like to work with the actor. Come on in. Let's rehearse this. What do you think? What do you think? When, you know, you let people give their feel, their thought, they're more positive about it. You know, and if it makes sense, this is not, I'm not like one of these, you know, tyrants. You do what I say. If it's funnier, you do it. That's what makes me people laugh. Mine don't. I want people to laugh. I want to be a team. And you, when you people don't realize you make a movie, it's 120 people over a year span. You know? You know, it's a group effort. Everybody contributes 1% more. You have 100 people. What's that? 100% better.
I think that's terrific, too, because there's this kind of intangible sense of a family and camaraderie in the movie that you can't make up, you can't manufacture. And you're speaking like you know, Coppola. From what I understand about Coppola, he gathers the cast around and they eat together and they rehearse together. It's a family environment.
Right, and you know, and if you like, put it this way, whatever you do for a living, you, I mean personally you, whatever you do, you go to work, you like your boss, you like going to work, that makes you do your job better.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? If you
coming
to work, I want to enjoy going to work. I want to enjoy busting my friends' balls all day and, you know, and getting paid to do it and making ourselves, you know, a living and having fun doing it. I mean, there's nothing more to me. And, you know, and even when we did Doughboys, I had a little trailer. And at lunchtime, no one would eat until anyone was done. We would all sit down together and boom. I mean, that was a fun feeling, and that came from the heart. I wrote that movie 12 years ago.
Yeah, well,
you know, that was one of my few scripts, the first early scripts that I wrote. And you know what? I try to bring it for 12 years around. You know, Hollywood, you hear these stories over Platoon. He wrote it in 76. They told him he was crazy. You know, he 86, 10 Oscars or whatever, 8 Oscars, whatever. You understand what I'm saying?
Now, if you wrote it so many years ago, do you think that the film is better that because you've done it now than if you had an opportunity to do it back then? Do you think you're at a place where it's a better film?
Oh, I don't think so. I think if your heart's in it, it'll always be as good as it can be. The only thing you can get is more resources, and I had all the resources I could have got then and now. It's all about, you know, how you feel. I'm a very passionate person. I love what I do. So every time I show up, whether it's one line or the whole movie, I show up on fire and ready to roll. I don't care. I don't care how small or how big. And my career has been turned around because of that. You know, and that's just my enthusiasm for a project. That's my excitement, and that's my energy, and that's just Louie. You know, and that's the way I feel. I get in there, and I roll. I just go, okay, let's go. And then you got all the actors around the team. I feel like, you know what I feel like sometimes, and this is crazy, Joe Montana, when he threw that past the clock, he gets up to the line, everybody's wrong. That slow-mo feel, everybody, you feel like you're just about to win. I feel like that almost when I do a scene of acting. It's the sickest thing, because I go back to sports, football, especially on everything. I'm a huge football fan. So I look at it as a team. And the better quarterback and the better positions you have around you, the more you'll win. And I believe winning, I like to win every time I go out. That's my mentality. You know, I love that. You know, I'm with myself.
Well, I love your passion, man. Anyone that's passionate about movies and art, we welcome
with open
arms.
With open arms.
Tell me about the response to the film. You guys have played at festivals, and it's been seen by many audiences. Tell me what's particularly satisfying about the response this film has gotten.
You know what? When I shot the movie, right, it was Italian-American Bronx. But right away, that pigeonholes people. You know, that's what people want it to be because that's what they think it is, correct?
Right.
And the film is not about Italian-American. I'm Italian-American. The film happens to be about a Bronx, but in the Bronx because that's where I'm from. But it's basically about family, about brothers, about father. You know, if you notice, everything goes back around in the movie to family. So, and at first I was like, and when people started seeing the movie early on, people were like, Louis, this is not an Italian movie. People were telling me, he was screening it for the first time, this is, a movie. Like, you could take it anywhere. And I was like, really? And then when I met our distributor, he said this to me. He said, I want to bring up, this is great. He goes, this movie, and he told me the same thing. And I was like, wow. And then as I started going to the festivals, Kansas City, Whistler, Canada, Phoenix, Palm Beach, Big Apple, Staten Island, Kent, Connecticut, we've done like 15 festivals, and we started getting the same reaction from people outside of New York with the same thing. This is about family. People were crying, and even, like, I got to tell you, the reaction around the country to the festivals on this movie was like one. Again, it was almost like a strong team where everyone had the same feel and think about it. And it didn't matter if they were 18 to 80, women, men, any nationality, any race, any everyone. And I would come up to me because I would do Q&As afterward for like an hour, 2 hours. The people would just be fascinated and listening. You know, and I'd be like, wow. And I started realizing, look at the diverse group of people that love this movie. And everyone's crying. I'm going, wow. And I realized I got my point across. It's not about Italian-American. Which happened to be I am. I'm the most proud Italian-American you're ever going to meet. But it wasn't about that. It wasn't about Bronx or New York movie. It was based on a family. And I realized at these theaters that, wow, just like everyone has a family member. And you're really reaching to people, not just Italian-Americans or blah. So it ended up being that on the festival circuit.
Right.
And I used to go to the theater so happy and proud about that. Because I'm a big family guy. And I love my family, you know, from my daughter to my mother and everyone in between, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, you get the feel of the audience, and that's what happened at these festivals.
That's gotta be so satisfying for you. It's a terrific movie. It's available now, Jerry. If you can type in the chat room there, to read more about it, DoughboysTheMovie.com, to read more about the film and pick it up. It's a wonderful, heartfelt film and very entertaining. And can I ask you real quick before I let you go about the spirit?
Tell
us about that.
Can I tell you, out of all the directors I've worked with, I had a great experience with every one of them. But my favorite was Frank Miller.
Really?
Really?
You know what? And this is amazing. He's the most personable guy, the most easy to talk to, the most creative in his mind, and fun, and just, you know, I worked with this guy, and was like, oh my God, I feel like I know this guy for 100 years. He treated me unbelievable, and he was just a gentleman to everyone, and his vision, just a creative person I get with. Like, I'm like, yeah, what's up, you know? And he started doing stuff to me in the movie. He was like, whoa, oh my God, he was having a great time with it, like a mad scientist. And I was like, I love this guy, you know?
He's like that, yeah.
Now, how is this shot? Is it shot? Are you doing most of your work in front of a green screen or a blue screen? Or how's
the whole movie green screen? Yeah, the whole movie.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
We had studios, the biggest green screen probably ever. You had to see the stuff we did. Sam, Scarlett Johansson, Ava Mendes, Samuel Jackson. I mean, Gabriel Mock. I mean, the movie is just a visual eyeful. Does that make sense? A visual eyeful.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yes, it does.
Between the women, the colors, the shots, the interesting paint, you know, just, I don't know. If you love that world, I think you're going to love this movie, you know? And like I said, working with Miller and Deborah, his partner on the movie, Deborah Del Pret, I mean, it was like I knew these people forever. I've never been so close to people immediately and felt comfortable, like, immediately, not just in Hollywood, but in general. And it was so easy doing this movie that I hope they make 10 of them and I can be in 9 of them.
Now that film, The Spirit, that opens Christmas Day, correct?
Is yeah.
The,
yeah.
Christmas Day, you know, and you'll be up. Go ahead.
Listen to this. You guys call me back and we'll do an interview after the premiere, which is the 17th, and I'll tell you how the premiere was.
Oh, I'd love that. I'd love that so much. And you're on Entourage. You're on Entourage this weekend, and then and your film Doughboys, go out, pick it up. Buy it. It's available now. It is a terrific entertainment, and I appreciate you being on the show so much, Lewis.
Yes, thank you very much, Lewis.
And just don't forget, MySpace just did a huge promotion for this thing, MySpace. So if you get a chance, go to myspace.com/Lewis Lombardi. Go to the MySpace. And really, MySpace has been doing a massive promotion. And you know what they told me? They were like, Louis, you got a great reaction from the people on the fans from MySpace, that we're going to keep you an extra 4 or 5 days on the promotion. So the fans out there, forget what I said in the beginning of this conversation, it goes back to the fans. So, man, I type back everybody. I write stuff. I do all that stuff. I'm there playing around. So everybody go to the MySpace page and just, keep in touch, all right?
We got a huge MySpace following, so we will definitely direct them
there. Yeah, we'll definitely do that.
There. Lewis, my friend, thank you so much.
You got it, guys. And call me after the Spirit premiere, and I'll come on, and we'll do a little blast from here.
Oh, that'll be great. Thanks so much, buddy.
Thank you.
You got it, guys. Have a great night.
You too.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
The movie is Doughboys, and it's available now. What a great guy.
Hey, I love him. We could have had him on for another hour at least.
We could. We could. I was told we had 20 minutes, and he gave us more time, so I'm really grateful for that. What a tremendous guy and a tremendous talent.
Yeah, without a doubt.
This is the kind of personal, heartfelt film that I like. There's nothing – it's authentic. It's the real thing, and it's from the heart. I love filmmakers that do that. So many movies are prototypes of other movies or copies of other movies, and they're not genuine. This one's a genuine film. So, all right. Are we ready for our next guest?
Yes, we are.
All right. Let's go ahead and play our next guest, and then we'll bring on Jason O'Brien. Now, let me see. Is Chris B. on the line to talk, or is she on the line to listen? No, she's not on the line to talk. Okay.
All right.
Then without further ado, let's get to our next guest. Here's the trailer for the film we're going to be discussing with them. People have really taken this film to their hearts. That's not it. That's actually the beginning of the interview. Here's the trailer for the film. It's all called Special. I chose the wrong one. Here's the trailer for Special.
Welcome to our study, Les.
And these really work?
Our results have been remarkably promising.
Les! Explain to my retarded sibling here. Just because something is a force field, right? Doesn't mean it has to be invisible.
Listen, I have to tell you guys something.
No!
I have superpowers.
Amazing, isn't it?
Quite unusual. Are you hurt?
No, I never felt better. Why?
I suppose that the main point to get across here is that even with good instincts, the life of a crime fighter takes a small adjustment period.
You're an armed robber?
No, I stopped crime, officer.
So, what are you planning on doing with these awesome powers?
Jesus, Mary Joseph. And not only do I have powers, but they're developing like gangbusters. Talked about it with my friends, and they agree that if a person doesn't do good with the gifts they're given, well, that's almost worse than doing evil, isn't it?
I have no idea what you're talking about, Les. You don't have superpowers.
What do you mean?
You're having an adverse psychological reaction, Les. You're reading my mind right now.
Les? Listen, what's going on?
Yeah, I'm good. Listen, we have to talk. Most people never stop to think about the problems associated with being a superhero.
After I started using my powers to help people, these two brothers in suits showed up and said, "We'll join them." They tried to destroy me.
What?
Who are you?
I come from the future that will no longer exist.
Are you under?
Yeah. I am.
Ah!
Jesus, Les. What happened to you, man?
You have to tell them about the suits. Okay? They're after me.
Yeah, hush. It's totally
crazy. Crazy.
Yeah.
They want me to think that I'm going crazy.
No.
Yeah.
You're losing your mind, man. You're losing your fucking mind.
Actor Michael Rapaport has worked under some of the great directors Tony Scott in True Romance, John Singleton in Higher Learning, Woody Allen in Small Time Crooks. He's also appeared in Copland, Deep Blue Sea, Hitch, and dozens more. His television credits include My Name is Earl, The War at Home, and a terrific recurring role in Prison Break. In his new film Special, Rapaport works under first-time writers directors Hal Haberman and Jeremy Passmore in the story of a troubled man who has an adverse reaction to a psychological drug and comes to believe that he is imbued with superpowers. Critics and audiences have fallen in love with this film, which they categorize as unrelentingly funny and ultimately touching. It opens in New York this weekend. It opens in L.A. on the 28th, and it is currently available at home on demand services there at home on your cable system. And I had a chance to speak with Rapaport, Haberman, and Passmore earlier this week, and here is that conversation. People have really taken this film to their hearts, and I'm wondering, Hal and Jeremy, what the original inspiration was behind Special.
I think, like, seriously, this sounds very strange, but it was Hal was hanging out. This is Jeremy, by the way. Hal was hanging out over at my house one day, and we were kind of talking about stuff, and we'd both been out of film school like a year, and just things weren't taking off the way either of us had expected them to, and he just looks at me and he's like, dude, we should make a movie this summer. And I looked at him and I was like, oh my God, we should. And then we just decided right then that we were going to make a movie. And then it was like, we kind of went through our list of ideas, and I'd had this thing that felt like a bit more of a comedy than I would normally do on my own. And Hal just, I got to that idea and he just pointed at me, he's like, that's it. And for half a second, I thought, you're totally nuts, because we didn't have any money. We were going to do this on credit cards. And it's like, how do you make a superhero movie with no money? But then it was like, all of a sudden, that became the most exciting thing about it, was like, we're already kind of doing something that's impossible. Let's just make it even more impossible.
And it was perfect, too, because doing it that way makes it so dangerous, and it makes it a movie that couldn't be made as a big-budget movie. And it also speaks to the character as well. I mean, the low budget danger of it is really has a lot to do with what the character is going through and the world he lives in.
Right. So Hal, when you guys went through your list of ideas, what was it about Special that was so special? why did you choose this one?
Well, I think two things. One was that it seemed impossible, and it was just this kind of thrilling challenge of there's going to be so many problems that we're going to have to deal with creatively that I don't know how we'll figure out solutions, but it's going to be fun trying. And the other thing was that emotionally it was just an idea that I really related to. I could, as soon as Jeremy told me someone thinks they're a superhero but really they're not, it just became a character that I could kind of see and feel and was real right away, and it was sort of had a kind of pathos in the same way that I could relate to.
Yeah, because it's just, like, instantly kind of sad and funny at the same time. Because even if you're thinking of it purely in terms of, like, take the show Jackass, you know, and I kind of had just been thinking it would be those kind of stunts. But it's like, Jackass is funny because they know what they're doing. And if it's, like, some poor guy who really thinks he's out fighting crime, it's sort of funny, but it's really messed up and kind of sad at the same time. Like, emotionally, it's really, I don't know, there's like there's a certain despair in it.
There's a despair and a certain delusional quality to it
that we happen to also find funny.
Yeah, which is funny. If it's happening to someone else, it's funny. No, it's like sad and funny at the same time, which is
the tone we both like, and probably a kind of the world we live in. So,
but it's hard, you know. It's really hard to get that, and so
to
it just
sort
of seemed
mixture,
like the perfect thing. And like Hal was saying, it was also just this notion that it would be totally impossible to pull off. Like, the challenge was so great that it made it, like, the temptation even stronger. Like, we have to do that one because it's impossible.
Right.
And so it just, I mean, I can't even tell you. It was so much fun. We just sat around for hours being like, okay, we don't have any money. What kind of superpowers can the guy have? And it's like, telepathy, you know, invisible force field, like making other people invisible. It was all like invisible stuff, or like basically stuff that wouldn't cost any money, you know. And it,
well, yeah.
I don't know. To me, it's like, it's almost like an in-joke. Like, I feel like people who are out there who are like indie filmmakers will watch the movie and they'll kind of laugh because they're thinking, I get it. Like, that didn't cost any money. You know what I mean?
But at the same time, right when they're sure that nothing surreal or impossible is going to happen, well, there are a few things that are physically shouldn't be possible and are done one way or another, pulled off with the, you know, terrific people we were working with between the stunt guys and the special effects, and it makes it more spectacular. Because if you're watching your average superhero movie, you know they're going to do impossible things that, and they just become mundane almost.
Yeah.
Right.
So we just decided to do the mundane.
But there was actually a point where, you know, we ended up with more, not like we ended up with real money, but we ended up with more money than we thought. And
wow.
We actually got these special effects guys at Zoic, and they were going through, and there was a part where he's in the invisible force field, and they were volunteering. They're like, hey, I know we never talked about it, but we'd be happy to throw in some, you know, ripples, like a ripple effect, so that you see the force field. And it was like, it was so tempting because it's cool, high dollar, you know, kind of value.
Right.
But at the same time, it was like, you know, it doesn't feel like our movie. Like, our movie on some level is about what do you do when you have no money. And so there were times like that where we actually pulled back from, I think we could have even gone further as far as production value.
Yeah, I think that's really smart. And Michael, when you read the script, first of all, how did you get your hands on it, and what about it turned you on?
I got my hands on the script from my manager, who had gotten it from the casting director. It was really just, you know, sort of casting 101. He read the script. He liked it. I read it and met with the guys, and I just really thought it was just, you know, just really, really well written, top to bottom. I thought it was funny, and I thought it was touching, and I just got it. And, you know, after I met Jeremy and Hal, and realized, you know, that they were kind of on the same page with what I thought the movie should be. You know, I jumped on board, and then, like, I don't know, like a month later, we were on the set making the movie, and it was a really, really easy process, and it was just good timing for all of us. It just, everything just clicked and made sense. But
yeah.
It was the script that was attracted me the most.
Was there anything about the character that that challenged you or scared you in any way?
Yeah, I mean the challenges came from the turns that he was going through throughout the story. He was you know, the way where he starts off at and where he ends, you know, we're so different. The idea of playing somebody who is, you know, sort of going through he's going through a mental breakdown was appealing, and that was frightening because you don't want to overdo it or play any sort of cliche, you know, like crazy person sort of stuff. So that was challenging, but you know, I never really looked at it like I don't think I even really understood that he was going through a mental breakdown until we started, because I was just looking at it like through his perspective, which was he wasn't going through a mental breakdown. He was just just everyone else was kind of flipping out. You know, that was his mentality. He's like, what are you talking about? You know, how could you not see this? Because he was so convinced that everything that he was saying and doing was so true. So, and I think that's the best way to play anything, is you just play it really sort of, you know, through a tunnel vision, and there's an immediacy to it. You know, it's just like, it's just kind of like, it is what it is.
Yeah. What fascinates me, I've always been interested in this, are filmmaking duos. And I'm wondering what the process is, where, how you guys co-direct, how does that work on set?
I think it, you know, it's weird. It was kind of a special case, no pun intended, but like, but because we were literally, before there was even, like, the very genesis was, we're going to make this movie,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, there was this determination to make a movie, and then we decided what it was, and it was like, because we were on that, like, that was always the goal, and then we pre-produced the heck out of it. Like, we shot, you know, we storyboarded everything, and we talked about aesthetic, and we just spent so much time, and there was so much invested that by the time we got on set, it was, we were just so on the same page. Like,
right.
And it's weird, because it's like, I feel like there's certain things that I never could have brought to the movie, but once you got there and you were shooting it, like, you knew that's the way it had to be. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like mm-hmm. I had my version of it and he had his version of it and those were sort of fighting. It was more like there was a right way to do it, and Rappaport was such an integral part of that. And it was like,
oh yeah,
it just kind of all went in a straight line. Like, kind of, I feel like there should have been more pain to it than there was.
Yeah,
you know?
It was surprisingly easy. We bounced ideas back and forth, and it was usually very clear, no matter who they came from, what the better idea was, and we always went with what we agreed was the better idea, which we never really thought about. It's an amazing process, too, to get to co-direct, too, because there'll be a bunch of stuff in the movie that comes out of Jeremy's mind that would never come out of my mind, and then there's
mm-hmm.
things that started to come out of my mind that if I'd been working alone, I would have said, no, that's stupid, I hate it. It's too much like me, and I would have cut it out. Whereas it appeals
right.
to Jeremy, and suddenly it stays in, and it makes me uncomfortable, but somehow it works.
And also, like, it's easier to see this in retrospect, but the movie is about a guy who is he's completely psychotic. And so in a weird way, like, he's both a superhero and not a superhero, and there's already this, in a weird sense, there's this duality in the movie. And I think that in some strange way, it was kind of a natural way to make this movie, that it was two
right.
different people. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And Michael, you've worked with some of the great directors that I admire intensely. And I'm curious what that dynamic was for you working with both Hal and Jeremy on this.
I mean, at first I was like, I didn't know exactly how it was going to work out. And I was like, oh, who am I going to talk to about what? And what if one of them...
Yeah.
You know, my biggest concern was that one of them was going to tell me to go left and the other one was going to tell me to go right. But
mm-hmm.
they were, I don't know if it was just, you know, the fact that they were just genuinely on the same page or, you know, just how they were in front of me. But, you know, it was cool. I never got any of that. Like, I would talk to both of them and, you know, they would, you know, one of them who had the take on that particular question or that particular moment would chime in and help me and assist me. And, you know, everything just kind of fell into place. And, you know, I gave them the trust that, you know that you're supposed to give your directors until it's breached. I just trusted them. And I really loved the script so much. And they had a clear view on what they wanted to do. And then, you know, and they were also very trustful of me. And, you know, if I wanted to try something or, you know, or something didn't make sense to me. Like, we just fell into the pocket. Like, there wasn't any bumps in the road. And quite honestly, because of the pace of the shooting, there wasn't any time for it. But, you know, it fell into place. I mean, because, you know, I worked on many, 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 many different projects. And, you know, once you kind of go, oh, this guy doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about, or, oh, we're not on the same page, once that's kind of there, it's hard
mm-hmm.
to fall out of that. And fortunately, we never got into that and never had to dig ourselves out of that hole, because once that
yeah.
kind of stuff starts happening, you get into trouble.
And on this particular project, I think that would have been catastrophic, because you're talking about a situation where people aren't really getting paid, and so
mm-hmm.
it's so easy to start grumbling, but like when Mike Rappaport shows up on set at 6 a.m. and he's in costume and he's just jazzed and so excited, and he's sitting there going, come on, let's go. It's like, it just sort of, I think the rest of the crew sees that and goes, holy shit, this is awesome. Oh, sorry.
No, you can say whatever you want. This is the internet.
But they're just like, oh my God, Mike Rappaport's having a ball. And it, like, it sort
right.
of just sets the tone for the whole crew.
I'll close on this question. You each can have a shot at it. This movie has been playing for audiences for a little while now, and it's finally going to reach a bigger audience this upcoming week, I'm sure. But what is their reaction to it? What are they responding to? And what do you want people to take away from it? Hal, if you want to start on that.
Well, we had an interview just a little bit earlier, and the interviewer told us, I watched this movie last night with my wife and my father. I really liked it. My wife hated it, and my father loved it. And that's kind of, wow. When we started, that's what I was going for. I was hoping whether it was a movie people loved or hated, it was a movie that people would care about, because it was something
right.
I cared about so much, and that's why I put so much of my life into it. And so in a lot of ways, I'm really happy about it. I want them to feel it's a surprisingly sincere movie for a movie about complete insanity.
Yeah.
I just
how
want,
about you?
I just want, like, I want, you know, I don't even really care what percentage of it is the audience, but I just want a certain percentage of the people to watch it and just be like, God, I loved that movie. Like, I loved that guy. I loved that movie, and it was the craziest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Even if it's just 1 out of 100, like, just because to me that's what it is. And it's like if somebody, like we were at a screening at the Austin Film Festival, and some guy afterwards goes, "That's my favorite movie of all time," and it was just the most awesome thing ever to hear someone say that. And just, I don't know. So I just hope that there's those little handful of rabid fans. Just makes me really happy.
Yeah. How about you, Michael?
You know, I just want people to see the movie. I think that this is the kind of movie that is going to have, a life after its release. I think that it's going to be, kind of be lingering around our lives for a while. And I think that the movie has so much heart and it's so genuine. You know, I think that the reaction will be an emotional reaction, whether you like it or not. It was made with a lot of passion from the entire group, and a lot of excitement, and it just made it from a very genuine place. And I think that if people are responding, they're going to have a very visceral, very honest response to it. And I hold it close to my heart. It became very personal to me, and I think hopefully that passion and then will come across in the movie. And I think that as long as it's an emotional reaction, that's the best I could hope for.
Yeah, we need more movies made with a certain passion. I mean, we need more personal, passionate movies. And
all you gotta do is just give them no money.
Keep
the big time actors out there. Make them start working for no money. And you'll get that passion for them.
Yeah. Well, I wish you guys the best of luck with the film, and thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks a lot.
All right, Michael
that
Rappaport.
Was cool.
Yeah, he's a cool guy.
Yeah, they're all of them. I liked all of them.
I feel so bad. We have two really cool people, Michael Rappaport and Louis Lombardi, and now we have to welcome Jason on the show. So.
Who? Never mind. I won't say that on the
air. I give him a hard time. We love Jason. Jason's show. That was Michael Rappaport and his directors of Special. That film opens in New York this weekend, L.A., the following weekend on the 28th, and it's currently available. It's even here on my home cable system. On demand on your home cable. So look it up. It's a really nice film.
Okay, cool.
And it deserves everyone's attention. All right, we're ready for our next segment.
And the Oscar goes to... The Oscar goes to...
And the Oscar goes to...
John Travolta, come on.
Sean Penn. Charlize Theron.
Jamie Foxx and Red.
Hilary Swank.
I'm just a girl from a trailer park who had a dream.
It's funny thing about winning an Academy Award, this will always be sort of synonymous with your name from here on in. It'll be Oscar winner George Clooney. Sexiest Man Alive, 1997.
This has been such an incredible year.
Academy Award winner, Russell Crowe.
Academy Award winner,
Nicole Kidman.
Here is Jack Nicholson.
Give it up for Halle Berry.
Welcome, the multi-talented Drew Barrymore.
Academy Award winner Renee Zellweger.
Thank the Academy. I thank you so very much.
All right, it's Oscar season coming up. The award season is about to start. It's very close. All the front runner award shows that we use to predict the Oscar noms. It's going to be an exciting season and a wide open field, really.
Very wide open.
More so than in previous years. And to join us to speculate on what could be in store for us this Oscar season is everyone's favorite Oscar host
Guru.
Of Blog Talk Radio. Yes. He airs every Monday night, 11 p.m. Eastern, blogtalkradio.com/OscarOscar. He is Jason O'Brien. The king has arrived. Hang on, it's not over yet.
Yeah, it's not over yet. I gotta let go.
All right, enough of that stuff.
Well, welcome to the show, Jason.
Thank you. The trumpet theme I just love, you know.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the official Oscar theme.
Well, yeah. You know, but I like it as my theme, you know.
No, son, it's my theme. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
We're already off to a great start.
Yeah, I love how you phrase that, by the way. I air every Monday night, yeah. Come check me as I air.
What are you airing out?
You air every Sunday night, right? Monday night.
Monday night. Damn it.
What's wrong with saying you air?
I don't know.
Well, it's like he's airing out his dirty laundry or something.
I didn't
say
you William airs.
No, you could say...
Hey,
you could
you
say
hear...
I make radio history every Monday night. That would sound better.
Did you guys hear William Arizona? Oh, never mind.
You're trying to make radio history every Monday night. History
right.
And the fact that I turn you off and I you become history.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
God, it's like the fucking lover's quarrel here.
Yeah, I think Jamie was a little distressed that, you know, I had Garney on Monday's show to talk about the Oscars and stuff, and, you know, Jamie wasn't invited, you know, so.
Garney, you know, and I know you guys probably talked about this on Monday night, and you'll forgive me because I think I passed out just from exhaustion on Monday night, but I didn't get to hear it. But, you know, Garney does this awesome thing with his blogs on Oscar time, with his predictions and nominations and everything. He does really in-depth analysis. It's always a pleasure to read.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, everyone loves Garney, and I love Jason.
Oh, of course,
we're kidding around. We jest the ones we love.
Absolutely.
So anyway, this segment we're calling "Killing Time" with Jason.
Yeah, I'm glad to be your filler tonight.
No, yeah. You're not a filler. I've been looking forward to this. So let's get the ball rolling.
Let me ask you something.
I always get the truth from Jerry. So
let me ask you something, and then I will I'll bring on some of the callers that we have. You,
they're lining up now, huh?
Yeah, so much enthusiasm for your appearance tonight.
Absolutely, that's what I bring them in. I'm telling you,
Jerry and I were talking before the show started, and we always tend to forget Frost Nixon. Does it somehow slip your mind too when you're going through?
No, I still remember it. It's because it's interesting. I'm kind of I really don't know how it's going to do. It's one of those like there's two films that are kind of unknowns for me this year for Oscar season, and Frost Nixon is one of them.
What's the other one?
What the hell? I knew you'd ask me that.
It's unknown. He doesn't know.
Oh, Australia. That's the other one.
I think Australia, if any indication, if this is, they're trying to market it like Titanic, but I mean, this is the Australian Gone with the Wind.
Yeah, that's the early reviews that I've read, that's what they're comparing it to. And,
yeah.
And if it can deliver on that, then I think it will be a pretty big Oscar contender.
That could be the front runner.
If Australia told the story of Richard Nixon and David Frost in love in the outback setting, I think that would have been.
Well,
sure
I mean, right there. I mean, dude.
Oh yeah.
I would say you have to give the movie the Oscar right now.
That's chemistry. Speaking of chemistry, Chris B is on the line. Chris B, hello, baby.
Hello, baby.
Okay. I picked up the wrong line. Hang on. Let me try that again. Chris B, hello, baby. Hang on. There you are. Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I can hear you.
Okay. I can hear you beautifully, Chris B.
Awesome. Finally. You guys, first of all, great show so far. I'm enjoying it very much.
Thank
you. It all goes down.
It's only getting better now, Crispy.
So how was your guys' weekend? I don't know what I know what I want to say, but I don't want to just dominate the show. So I thought I'd be nice. And
oh,
I'd
rather
dominatrix.
Yeah, I enjoy the thought of you dominating, Crispy. So
domination right now.
Yes, dominate us.
Dominate you. Well, I finally got to see Repo on Sunday.
Okay.
And it was
how was it?
It was amazing, of course.
Mm. Did you honestly expect a bad review?
I loved it. I wrote a very long review, actually. I posted it on Rotten Tomatoes, IMDb, and a few other places that I can't remember right now because I was having
We'll check that out. Okay.
Yeah. I tried to keep it spoiler-free, but basically, if you like, you know, something different, something original, then you should like this movie. So it was a lot of fun. The Indian, we actually blew out their speakers.
Wow.
Yeah.
Whoa,
and
man.
Right at the climax of the movie, it just stopped playing. It came up.
Kind of like
stopped.
Me.
Yeah.
We knew that was coming.
Mm-hmm.
After I climaxed.
Jamie, you're too fast for me tonight. I had my joke
playing.
Ready to go.
Yeah, it was great. And Darren and Terrence were amazing. They're the nicest guys I think I've ever met.
Oh,
they were
wow.
so cool. We were the last ones to see them, our little street team, and they signed everything for us. It's like 2:30 in the morning. You know they're going on like 2 hours of sleep. Darren actually tried to call Ash for me. I almost died.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
So,
you were able to
spend time with them and talk to them? And
Yeah, we got to talk to them. I mean, they're really cool people. Got a bunch of hugs, you know, a bunch of pictures. It was awesome.
Oh, great.
Yeah, and I found out that they're also going to be doing 2 more road tours, so we might be able to get them back in for us so you guys can come see them in your area.
Well, fill us in. I mean, keep us posted.
Yeah, keep us posted. Please.
Absolutely. We've been posting bulletins on MySpace. If any of you are on MySpace, you can add our street team because we're going to be updating stuff probably every day until we can find out whether or not we're going to get a showing again with the guys.
Okay.
That's good to know. Thank you.
No problem.
Chris B., what's your Oscar prediction? Give me one Oscar prediction.
One Oscar
Repo,
prediction.
Best Picture.
Repo, Best Picture. Terrence the Dunage, Best. No. Anthony Stewart-Head, Best Lead. No, I'm just kidding. To be honest, I haven't watched that many movies, but I know that there's going to be a couple of the blockbusters from the summer that are going to be contenders, right?
The Dark Knight and WALL-E.
Dark Knight, probably.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't – I usually DVR the Oscars so that I can fast forward past everybody talking and just find out what happens. I'm very bad. I have a full-time job and a part-time job. I can't just sit and watch.
Crispy, I understand. I understand. Don't.
That's so ironic
cry,
because
Crispy.
You do
huh?
to the Oscars.
I'm
going to
cry.
You do to the Oscars. Excuse me, Jason, I'm talking. You do
oh,
to
sorry.
The Oscars what I do to Jason's show, which are incredible.
You know, you can just feel the love. You can just feel
yeah, it's
the
just,
love
there's
between
so much
Damon
of it,
Al and Jason O'Brien.
Well,
there's so much
like,
love there.
It's like Frost Nixon right here, folks.
Yeah, you're right. It is kind of that way.
I didn't want to admit that because of Jason and his Oscar fascination, but that's pretty much what happens.
We're
I
all friends
you call
here.
It a fascination.
Yeah, German
but
porn.
You should
that's
try,
Jason's
you should try
fascination.
Watching it. Make it an event. Make it an event evening. I mean, you know, invite your friends
okay.
over, you know, watch the show.
Okay. I'll try that this
yeah.
year.
Pretend like you okay. care this year.
I'm
we'll
going to watch it, Jason.
Like
pretend like it. That's going to be the hardest part, I think. Is
I
want to
see it at Jason's house.
Yeah. I should put up a webcam and so you can actually see the excitement of my house on Oscar night.
Well, no, Jamie, I figure me and a futurist will come crash and hang out.
Hang on.
Oh, you
want to
come over? That's what you want to do.
Yeah, I want to come.
Okay, enough of this Brokeback Mountain talk. What, Crispy? What you were about to say? You said my name.
I said that you live near. You said I said you live nearby. You can come hang out and pretend to watch the Oscars at my house.
Oh.
There you go. Oh, okay. Wow. All right. Well, we know. All right. Never mind. But
you're married, though,
what?
Right?
I'm married, but I can. I have.
Yeah. I'm,
but you're very liberal.
I'm
no,
not.
Why does that matter?
You're open-minded, right, Chris?
Yeah,
yes,
you're open-minded.
You have to be a fan of Repo. You have to be.
Yeah.
See? There's hope for you, Jamie.
If there's a husband
right.
in the house, I'm just not, you know, I refuse to get on all fours, first of all. I'll have to be the one.
I'll see if I can get Tams down here.
Okay, well, then you're on then. All right. Crispy, thank you for calling in.
Thank
and
you,
keep
Chris.
Us posted on Repo, okay?
Yeah,
yes,
thanks.
I will.
Thank you to all of you and all the fans for still tuning in. We love
you
guys.
Yeah, you guys are great. Because we've been pathetic since our last Repo show, and you guys have stuck by it.
I'm sorry I missed your I know I missed one, but I was...
Well, you missed my show, Crispy.
Well, yeah, that was the night of Repo, but I was in the theater at the point.
Okay.
There's always the archives. There's always
the
archives,
yeah.
Crispy.
The archives
show on Monday night, I'll be forgiven.
Okay. I'll talk to you guys later, but don't hang up on me. I got to hear.
Okay.
All right, baby.
All right, thanks, Ray.
Bye.
We have one more phone call.
Oh, another phone call, huh?
Yeah. Who is it?
Hang on.
Yeah, who is it?
We need
am, I clair- am I clairvoyant?
You're Dionne Warwick from the Psychic
Wait.
Friends Network.
Freskin? Or?
We got to know who's calling, Jamie. I mean, you know.
Okay, I have a 314 area code. Go right ahead.
You know your luck with callers lately.
314, if you're on the line you want to talk, now's your chance.
Hey, guys, how you doing? This is Devin from St. Louis.
Hey, buddy. How you doing,
hey,
man?
What's up?
Not too bad. How you guys doing?
We're okay.
We're having a good time.
We have Jason O'Brien
yeah.
on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good.
Yeah, Jamie, I got your email. So I just now called in. I caught the tail end of the Michael Rappaport interview, which I'm looking forward to listening to in the archives.
Oh, thank you, buddy. Now, you have an exciting story. You have an exciting story. This is why I wanted you to call in. Jason, just sit tight real quick. I promise we'll talk about Oscars, but this is pretty cool.
Oh, that's okay. You know, I'm all for calling in during my segment. So.
Yeah.
You did something that excites us very much. You attended a screening of Schrader's new film, Adam Resurrected, and you saw a restored version of Mishima, and you actually had a chance to speak with Schrader as well. I want you to tell us all about it from the beginning, your impressions, what happened. You're on.
Okay, well, I guess I should just start by saying the reason I emailed you with the story is because I was very much turned on your show by, you know, the first show I ever heard of yours was the Paul Schrader tribute show and the subsequent interview. So, yeah, that tribute show is just it blew my mind with, you know, you had Forsythe and Dana Delaney and Jeff Goldblum, and then the interview you had with him was great, and I've been hooked ever since. So
thank you, buddy.
So,
thank
yeah,
thank
was,
you very much. We appreciate
you,
that.
Yeah, oh, hey, you guys do great work. But, yeah, when I had this opportunity, I felt like I had to share it with you, knowing that you guys are big Schrader fans as well. So
absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Schrader, him personally, he was so accessible and so gracious. The first night he introduced Adam Resurrected, afterwards he was interviewed on stage, and they had to clear the theater because they had another screening, so he didn't get to take but a couple questions with the audience. But afterwards he was in the lobby. And I don't necessarily consider myself a huge fanboy by any means, but
right.
you know, this is the guy that wrote Taxi Driver, so
I
had my copy of Transcendental Style and Film, which he very graciously autographed, and he posed for a picture, which was great. And then the next day, he introduced Mishima, and then afterwards, he did about a 45-minute Q&A with the audience, which was really great. I was able to ask him a question, and. You know, that's when you realize just how much of a genius this guy is, because I thought my question maybe had some pertinence, and then he answers it, and you're like, oh, well, why didn't I think of that? Of course, that's the answer. But no, Adam Resurrected, I think, very much ties into what you guys are talking about, because I think Jeff Goldblum is, you know, definitely going to be competitive for the Best Actor award. He's really great, and you know, like all Paul Schrader films, Adam Resurrected, it really makes you work. It's it's a true work of greatness, I think. I'm not terribly familiar with the source material that he used. From what he said, it's based on an Israeli novel in the late 60s,
right,
called Adam.
Mm-hmm.
Son of Dog. And, I mean, just from the very beginning, this idea of these, you know, Holocaust, you know, survivors who are deemed to be mentally defective being exiled out into the desert, you know, that in and of itself is so Schrader. It has those religious, you know, underpinnings to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really a great work. I enjoyed it tremendously.
Just reading the synopsis of the film and hearing Goldblum, I mean, Goldblum gave as thorough a synopsis as you can get of the film during our interview, and it sounds so Schrader. I mean, if you were to attach a director to that, Schrader would be the number one guy. I can't think of anyone else more perfectly suited to that kind of material.
It very much is. I mean, just the character that Jeff Goldblum plays, Adam Stein, he does have the, you know, kind of a Schrader protagonist, all the qualities, the mm-hmm. you know, a bit of narcissism, you know, a warped worldview, all those things that, you know, Schrader incorporates into his great protagonist, that's definitely there. So the source material definitely fits, you know, kind of the mold that Schrader works in. It's really wonderful.
And tell me real quick before we let you go, and I really appreciate you calling in. Schrader seems like such an incredibly intelligent man, and he speaks like a writer. I mean, when we had him on, and he talked about how movies are dead, and how he used euphemisms like analogies like, you know, four legs in a chair. If you take off one leg, you know, wobbles, and that's where movies are right now. I don't know exactly what he said, but it was brilliant when he said
Yeah. Well, actually, after the screening of Mishima, the question I asked him was, you know, where did he come up with this idea to incorporate these, you know, very highlight set piece adaptations of Mishima's work into the film? Because I kind of think that is the brilliance of the film. And his response was, he'd gotten some criticism for the character of Travis Bickle, kind of writing down to that character. You know, he's uneducated, he has a narrow worldview. I'm guessing this criticism probably came after the assassination attempt on Reagan. But mm-hmm. he said, dealing with a character like Mishima, you're kind of going to the other end of the spectrum. Here's a guy who's highly intelligent, a public intellectual, but you're still dealing with that same, you know, kind of idea of suicidal glory. And how do I show that? And, you know, in a way that's not going to, you know.
A brilliant writer. I mean, he's a brilliant writer, Mishima.
Yeah, it's very true. So he said he knew he had to get into the work. He knew that he had to somehow show that work in the film. And he also made a comment. It was actually kind of funny. He said, you know, I'd like to, you know, come up here and say it was some kind of brilliant artistic revelation that I had. But really it was just analytical problem solving is all it was. And I knew that you know, I had to somehow incorporate Mishima's work in there. And by doing these highly stylized set pieces, it very much, you know, reflected the notion that Mishima started in the theater, and this is how, you know, this is probably how he envisioned these works to be. But the odd thing, at least what I think, is that they are these set pieces, theatrical set pieces, but so cinematic, you know,
mm-hmm.
so beautifully done. It was a wonderful experience.
I admire the hell out of talents like that. I mean,
because
he's not the most commercial of directors, and he doesn't care. He's not going to be untrue to his own voice, to satisfy the status quo. And this is the most challenging movie he's ever done, Adam Resurrected.
Yeah.
So this is proof of that. Is Mishima on DVD now? Has Criterion released that DVD? They were supposed to.
Yeah, it's out.
Yeah, I believe they have. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's why I was so lucky to be able to see, you know, a restored print of this in the theater. Yeah, so, and some of the changes he made, all the narration is now in Japanese. Originally, Roy Scheider did the narration. Now it's all in Japanese. There's an extra scene. There was an actor that worked with Ozu. I think he was in Tokyo Story, where he played the first segment the young acolyte's priest that he he said he just took it out initially because it dragged a bit, but he said I had to put that back in because I respected this actor so much.
Right.
But it's definitely a beautiful film, and Schrader actually said he considers that even to this day his best work.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, man. Devin, I guess feel free to call in anytime you want.
Thank you.
I appreciate your support, guys.
Hey, I have to thank you guys for asking me to call in. You know, you're used to having the likes of Brian De Palma and Jeff Goldblum on your show. So.
Hey, we liked having you on, too, and please call back.
Hey, dude. Yeah, thank you guys so much. And like I said, you know, I appreciate all the work you do. And, I mean, nowhere in kind of the, you know, the commercial media are you going to find insightful commentary on film, you know, like you guys do. So I appreciate
what you do. Thank you so much.
I'm going to copy that and replay it every show. I keep trying to convince people.
Like I said, I've been hooked for a while. And unfortunately, just the nature of my job, I usually listen to the archive. But,
Understand. I understand.
Yeah. But I've been in the chat room a few times. I'm Hearst 42, so look out for me, okay?
Oh, okay.
Cool. All right.
All right, buddy. Thank you so much, Devin.
Thank you. Good night.
Hey, thank you, guys. You take care, okay?
You too,
buddy. Bye-bye,
okay,
man.
Bye.
All right. I wanted to hear that. I want to hear a take on Adam Resurrected. Yeah. We have two other phone calls, and we'll get to them after we get a chance to talk to Jason for just a second.
Well, I mean, that Love Fest could have gone on for a while. I mean, geez, you know.
I cut it short because I'm nothing if not considerate of my guests. So,
I appreciate that, you know.
Yeah.
You know, the most exciting award category this year for me has to be Best Actor. Because there's so many
definitely.
Great.
It's going to be wild.
Huge amount of contenders possible in that category.
Mm-hmm. You've got, without a doubt, I think you've got Sean Penn for Milk.
Sean Penn, definitely.
Mickey Rourke for The Wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Langella for Frost Nixon.
Yes.
Maybe Hugh Jackman for Australia.
Possibly.
Maybe, yeah.
That's a possibility.
Who else do you see?
He was the sexiest guy alive, you know, so.
Yeah, I know. So, I mean, Robert Downey Jr., possibly. There is talk. They're throwing around Robert Downey Jr.'s name a lot definitely for Tropic Thunder for a supporting, along with Tom Cruise.
I think more in supporting he's got a chance there,
but
I think
there
in
is
lead
talk.
Actor.
They are talking about, you know, at least they were a couple months ago, Jason, there was talk about Iron Man, no joke.
I heard that.
Yeah.
But I just think the competition's it's too tough in this category for that.
Yeah, I think now we got so many a lot of great contenders. I think there's Tom Cruise for Valkyrie. If Valkyrie is as good as it looks, I think that's a possibility.
I actually think Valkyrie will be completely ignored. I'm looking forward to it. I want to kind of see this finally, but I think there's a couple of films, Valkyrie and Defiance, that I think are just going to get lost under the radar, I think,
well,
with
I think
the other
Defiance,
films.
Just the reviews I've read so far, it's like we were talking, you know, he almost makes a great film, Edzwick, but he can't, it doesn't always come together, and this sounds like one of those cases where it's an awesome trailer, but just the finished product, it does something, there's always, like the last couple films, something missing.
Yeah, I was telling
Jerry, it really comes together.
It looks like a made-for-A&E movie, almost, but
Edzwick
has a thing, he does socially conscious action movies. That's what he does.
Right.
And
you're
sometimes,
right.
Sometimes he hits it out of the park, and
sometimes
you know,
he doesn't.
They're lacking.
Yeah.
Doubt. Where do you see Doubt? Definitely adapted screenplay, I would think.
Yeah, and it's iffy for me on Best Picture. I think it's going to be one that gets a lot of acting nominations.
Yeah.
But I think it could get left out of Best Picture and Director. I think you may just see a lot of acting nominations in screenplay.
And I think Revolutionary Road, we can't rule that out if that's...
Right.
That's another... You know, I was really high on that film until I talked to Garney about it, and, you know, and I read the first couple reviews that have come out now, and, you know, I still think it definitely has shots for Leonardo DiCaprio and definitely Kate Winslet to be nominated. In fact, I think Kate Winslet may actually win this year.
She's got two big possibilities.
Right, and I just don't see another actress really taking it away from her in the lead actress category. But the film itself, I don't know, I still have it in my five predictions for Best Picture. You know, but again, it's one of those that it's really going to have to be an American Beauty type success,
right?
You know, to have all those critics just lauding over it. And so far, the couple reviews have been kind of tepid. You know,
really?
It's not enthusiastic
but
that I've heard.
The ones that I've read have all singled out, whatever they feel of the film, they've all singled out the performances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
definitely.
Another supporting performance that has been getting the most praise in that film is Michael Shannon.
Yeah, I have him as
yeah.
a definite Best Supporting Actor nomination as well.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so I think we're looking at Leo Rourke, Sean Penn, and Frank Langella, and that there's one wild card in there that we're missing.
Yeah, I'm still, you know, I'd love to see Josh Brolin get nominated for W, but I really think Richard Jenkins for The Visitor will actually get enough
yeah,
of a push
that
to kind of get that.
Definitely that one. That should.
Yeah,
get
and I hope
record.
So. That'd be so good to see.
Yeah, let me take this phone call 760. Go right ahead.
Hello, this is Nick. Nicholas.
Hi, Nick.
Hey, Nick.
Told you guys I would call in eventually. I don't usually have Wednesday nights off, and it's killed me.
Nick, hang on the line. You're going to stay with us through the rest of the show. Right. Let me take this one phone call real quick. 510.
Hey guys, it's Tamsin.
Hey, what's up?
How you guys doing?
We're doing good.
Let me talk to Tamsin.
Oh, well,
shut up, Jamie.
Great. All right, just mute us all, Jamie.
Yeah, I will. We'll get your.
hang on. I'm going to mute you guys. Okay, you guys are muted. Tamsin, what's going on, baby?
Not a lot, Jamie. How you doing?
I'm good.
So I promised the people in the chat rooms that I would say boobs.
That you'd say boobs. That's why you
yes,
called
I
to
promise.
Say boobs?
No, I called to talk to you, lover.
Oh, hang on. I didn't mute Nicholas. Hang on. I hear Nicholas groaning. Hang on. Okay. when are we going to have the opportunity for you to show me your boobs? That's what I want to know.
I guess you're just going to have to make it out here. But, you know, if you're ever in California, they're yours for the seeing.
Oh, you live in California?
Yeah.
Oh, well, there's
lots of
boobs out there. You would
notice if you would add me to your MySpace page.
I did.
Did you?
Yeah, of course I did.
Oh, the Movie Geek one, that's right.
Well, yeah.
But do you have your own? Because you told me we were gonna exchange emails here, and then it never happened.
We'll do that. I'll add you to my personal. I'm trying to find some romantic music on my list here to play over our little interlude.
Yeah. Oh, how sweet!
I will add you to my my personal MySpace.
Oh, good.
I'll do that tonight.
Okay.
And Tamsin, I do appreciate you calling very much.
So there was actually something I was going to say aside from boobs.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
If you guys haven't seen Repo yet, go see it. I've seen it 3 times.
Repo?
And it is amazing. Yes.
Okay. I've seen it three times.
It's awesome.
We will see Repo.
It's been an Oscar.
You and Chris B are going to keep us up to date on where it's going to be and when it's going to be there. Okay.
Yes.
Is that a child in the background that I hear?
Yeah, that's my son.
Oh, you have a child?
I have a 3-year-old.
It was very nice having you on. I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Yes, mommy's on the radio.
we love you, Tamsin, and thanks for listening. And call anytime you want.
Okay, we'll do.
All right, bye, man.
Bye.
Okay, I'm done flirting. You guys are on live now again.
Okay, that's great. I'm so glad to hear that, you know.
You are shameless.
Yeah, really. No, but it was cool to hear. I'm so glad Tam's called in, though. I'm really glad, you know.
You put
that
us
you called
on
him.
Mute.
You had to mute us, didn't you?
Somebody had to say boob.
You mute us. Oh, my God.
He muted
us. Of course.
Us.
Of course.
I can't believe it.
I muted the boobs so that I could hear the word boob come out of
Yeah, but see, Tamsin, as soon as you announced that you had a kid, that ruined it for Jamie. So, see, and Tamsin, I'll give you a much longer segment on my show. So,
yeah.
I'll give
yeah.
you an entire show. How about that?
Yeah.
I'm listening.
Yeah,
to
he might
one.
Be longer, but he has no stamina, Tamsin. Okay? Let's get it straight.
Oh, great, another
yeah.
fucking pissing contest.
Nicholas.
I love fighting over women in cyberspace with Jamie. That's...
Tell me about tell me your thoughts on the Oscar season. Tell me why you called, Nicholas.
Yeah, Nicholas, why did you call?
Why did Nicholas call?
Oh, thank you. That is why I called. I mean, the Oscars this year, I think, are going to be really interesting. You know, it didn't even hit me until Monday night when I listened to you and Garney debate it, that basically this year is basically almost, it is so wide open.
Oh, big time. Big time.
Oh, yes.
Pictures this year, and I was talking about a Slumdog Millionaire on Monday, and you know, now they're really telling me, you know, there's probably no shot in hell for that film, and I can see exactly where you guys were coming from on it too.
Let me say something about that film. I've seen it. If the whole world could vote for a film for Best Picture, that would be the film. That's what I call a global. That movie's a global favorite right now. A lot of people all over the world love that movie.
It's
a good movie.
It's the equivalent to Barack Obama.
That's very much what it's like, Jamie. It's one of those films that is universally praised. I've seen it. It's okay.
Garney says the closest thing to a sure bet this Oscar season is Heath Ledger for supporting actor. Agreed?
Yeah, definitely. He'll win.
Yeah, if he's nominated, he'll win.
Who will accept on his behalf? You think Michelle Williams or Chris Nolan?
That's interesting.
Harrison
I haven't
Ford.
That far.
Maybe one of these actually.
Or Weird Al Yankovic. Who will accept on his behalf?
Oh, I know. I think Christian Bale.
Could be
will.
Chris Nolan. I don't know.
I think it'll be Ahmadinejad. Now let's go to. Now, Best Actress is a little... Best Actress this year... Man, last year was so great for actresses, and it's not as an impressive a year for actresses this year, is it, Jason?
No, and I think it's pretty clear-cut, too. You know, like, actors all over the place with so many nominees, but I think you're going to... As soon as the film awards start coming out, I think it's going to be pretty... I think we could predict easily which five are going to be nominated right now.
Let's
I think
do
it'll
it.
Be Kate Winslet.
Tell me what you got.
Well, there'll be Kate Winslet for Revolutionary Road, I'm pretty sure, unless that film is just an absolute turd.
What about The Reader? Didn't she get a dual nomination?
Yeah, but I think that's going to be more supporting. They're going to push her for supporting.
Okay.
So she may get both nominations, and I think, like Garney and I were talking about, I think that'll actually help her in winning for the lead category if she gets both nominations. But I think it'll be Meryl Streep in Doubt. That's easy. Anne Hathaway's another given. And I think Nicole Kidman, you know, especially if Australia is as good as it is, and
I've heard
is her performance, actually, they're saying, is one of her best already, so I think she'll get it. And probably Angelina Jolie for Changeling.
I think those are all possibilities, although I do think a long shot, but you can't rule out Kristin Scott Thomas.
She's a possibility.
But it is a long shot.
And Cate Blanchett for Benjamin Button is probably another chance, too. But,
right.
You know, she's becoming like the Meryl Streep, where any performance she gives is pretty much nominated now.
Benjamin Button, I think, is going to be a big Oscar darling, actually.
It could be.
It's one of those that I think, you know, it'll get Best Picture nominations and, you know, and get the acting. And, well, see, I don't know about Brad Pitt getting an acting nomination. I don't have him in my list. I don't.
Yeah, I don't either.
For some reason, I just don't see
him. I was talking in terms of Best Picture. I mean, that's the big prize. But in cinematography, I think it's got that bag. Yeah,
definitely.
It's adapted, isn't it? It's adapted from a novel or from a story.
Well, it's Fitzgerald, isn't it?
Yeah, it's an adapted screenplay.
Yeah.
It'll definitely be up for adapted screenplay. And, you know, so I just don't see, like, for some reason, I just don't see it being the actual winner, though. I just don't, you know, I actually see it coming down to between Australia and Milk to actually win.
I think Milk will probably. I think Milk out of everything will probably take it. I think the rest.
Well,
is too
I wouldn't
small.
Go so far though, because I mean it's the potential controversial lightning rod film, you know.
Yeah,
and
remember
and
we
the
thought
only thing,
the same thing about Brokeback a couple of years ago.
Yep, absolutely. That's where exactly where I was going, you know. And also if you think back to JFK, you know, films like that that were, you know, lightning rods of controversy that probably should have won, you know. But the thing I think about Milk this time is it's, you know, it is coming at a very prescient time here where, you know, you get Prop 8 overturned, you know, so I think there's going to be a lot more power to that film when it comes out.
Mm-hmm.
But Australia could end up being kind of the safe, Braveheart kind of choice, you know, if the film is a little too controversial.
Nobody's talking about Gran Torino, actually. And I saw the ads that Warner Brothers taking out. I mean, they've already got the 4-year consideration ads up for it.
Look, I'm sure it'll be a good film. I like Eastwood more than probably anyone else on this show. But I don't think it's Oscar material for some reason.
I just don't see it. Yeah,
I don't think Changeling is Oscar material, really.
Nope, I don't either, actually. Because I think Changeling kind of, you know, it didn't perform quite as well, and I think it's going to be actually forgotten. I think Angelina Jolie may get the only nomination for that film.
I mean, I liked the film because I thought it was much better than everything I'd been hearing about it. So it was
probably
good
art direction.
I think the art direction it deserves, set design,
and
all
that's
that.
True. It could get yeah.
Yeah, but the first half hour of the film is all you're just like it is mind-boggling because you know it's not her kid, and they're telling her to go along with this, and you're just like, yo, bitch, you know, smack these people.
Well, and with like Gran Torino, I just don't sense this is like Eastwood on a par of Mystic River or Million Dollar Baby.
It's just Eastwood.
It doesn't have the same resonance, I don't think.
Yeah, it's just Eastwood wanting to get back in front of the camera, and that's fine, that's cool. But I don't think not everything he does has to be nominated.
You know, at prom night, my first prom, I ate at a restaurant called Grand Cruise, and I predict that Gran Torino will end up just as terribly as my prom night.
This is a confessional night for Jamie Duvall and Movie Geeks United.
Isn't every night a confessional night for Jamie?
If you go see Gran Torino, you will not get laid. That's essentially what I'm saying.
I don't think I'm going to be able to watch the film with a straight face now.
Now I'm going to be thinking of Jamie during it, damn it.
Okay, run through some of your, because you have them all written down. You're such a expert.
Wait, written down? I have them in my mind. What are you talking about?
Oh, okay, right, man. Tell go through some of the categories and your predictions. And then
well, anyone in particular you want, or I mean, you want
director? I want to hear director.
Okay, for director, I think it's going to be David Fincher for Benjamin Button, Gus Van Sant for Milk, definitely. Christopher Nolan for The Dark Knight. Even if Dark Knight doesn't get nominated for Best Picture, I think he's definitely going to get the director nomination. I think Baz Luhrmann for Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other, I've got one spot there. I'm trying to figure out maybe Sam Mendes for Revolutionary Road, if it turns out as good as I think it might be.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe Ron Howard for Frost Nixon. I just don't see Clint Eastwood getting a nomination for
I think this is Eastwood. I don't think Eastwood's get. I would be surprised if Eastwood gets nominated. Like I said, I like him a lot, but I just don't think these are. There's going to be a lot of other things to pick from.
Yeah,
these two
films
are
not. Yeah, I think those are the biggest. And of course, director always throws in like one kind of indie. You know, Garney thinks it's going to be Mike Lee. You know, but if they're going to throw someone in, they might throw in Slumdog Millionaire Danny Boyle.
I think it would be
they
Danny
could.
Boyle
they could, or they
Aronofsky.
Could, or they could slide in John Patrick Shanley.
Yeah, that's a possibility too.
I don't think it's going to be Mike Lee for this one. While this is a good
I don't
film,
think so
it's not
I don't
classic
it.
Mike Lee. It's not vintage Mike Lee. I just don't see
Which
it.
Means you don't fall asleep watching it.
Oh, Garney
is
correcting himself.
You want to strangle sometimes. At some point, you want to strangle Sally Hawkins, Dom, like at parts in this film because she's just so happy. And
I love Secrets and Lies.
Oh, Secrets and Lies is one of his masters.
Oh, that's a good film. Yeah.
Yeah.
757. Let me take a phone call. And Nicholas, you're still on the line, so behave yourself. 757. You're on the air.
Yeah, I was just calling in to listen because my connection got timed out. But
Garney! Okay, awesome. Bye, Garney. Now, back to the categories.
What the fuck is this, a rogues gallery?
Hey, we talked about how his screenplay should never get nominated because he doesn't even write a screenplay.
God, Garney's still talking.
Garney's still talking.
All right, Garney, stop real quick. I have you on mute. I'm going to unmute you again. Start at the beginning.
You can unleash Garney.
Go ahead. Garney, start at the beginning.
I told you I didn't want to talk about Watergate.
Jesus.
Okay.
Dude,
so best supporting category, Jason. What do you think of best supporting category?
Wait. I'm sorry. I'm recovering from Garney. Which supporting category? Supporting actor?
When did Daniel Plainview call in?
Garney,
okay,
I'm
doing supporting
I'll put you live on the line, Garney, but behave yourself. Hang on.
Are you putting him on now, right when I'm about to start?
Okay. Garney, Jason's about to talk. Everyone be quiet. Nicholas,
yeah,
you're talking far too much. Be quiet.
Clear the room. Okay, best supporting actor. You want to go for that?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah. Okay, Heath Ledger for The Dark Knight, definitely. I think it would be the biggest upset if he doesn't get the nomination for that. Philip Seymour Hoffman for Doubt. I think I'm convinced, Garney convinced me that Josh Brolin will probably get nominated here for Milk. And then Robert Downey Jr. for Tropic Thunder and Michael Shannon for Revolutionary Road.
Okay, I'd like to throw in a dark horse.
Yes.
James Franco for Milk. Although I do
that's
think
a possibility,
I,
too.
I do think, because I would actually even be so far in another year, I would actually nominate him for Pineapple Express.
Yeah.
Now, for a comedy, I know that's a long shot, but he is so good in that film. And he said in an interview in GQ when Pineapple Express came out, this and Milk are the first films he's done that he's proud of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he's very proud of these two films.
What
he
the hell is that noise? Guardian?
Oh, wait a minute. What kind of noise?
Garney, are you locked in the meat locker?
No, I was moving my dog to the other room because he's whining because I won't let him play with his monkey toy that makes the noise. So it was either hearing the door close, having him in another room, or constantly hearing this.
I love this, the monkey toys.
This is cool, though. He's got a puppy. He's got a... What the fuck is he? You got the extras from Tarzan in there? I mean, what the fuck?
My God.
Garney has an active social life.
Well, Garney is the only one I think who actually he does the chores while he's talking on the show. See,
yeah, exactly.
I like to multitask.
Yeah, I'm masturbating. I thought I would call him. Nicholas. Nicholas, speaking of masturbating, do you have anything to say? Do you have any thoughts that you want to share?
I was going to say the same thing that you guys were going to say about Gran Torino. I just don't see again anything. And you know what? And I was actually talking with my good friend who knows a lot about movies last night on AOL. And, you know, and he's basically saying this one's going to get nominations. And I'm trying to tell him I don't think it will. I mean,
there's
no.
Just too much other stuff coming out, I think, that will overshadow it.
I
yeah.
mean, now that I just found out the movie is rated R now. I mean, I heard PG-13 like probably like 3 weeks ago, but now it is rated R. But that still doesn't bode well. The movie's too short, I think, is also the other problem. If it's really that short, I don't think Clint Eastwood was really aiming that high. And I don't really think that – I really think Gran Torino will basically get something in the Oscars, basically.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think he's been nominated – you know, he's been around the Oscars here for so long lately. You know, I just think they're going to – say, you know, I mean, they love Eastwood, but I think they're going to realize that these are not up to par to his other films.
Yeah, I mean, this is not, these are, and Gran Torino may be a very good film, but I just, there's going to be other stuff, and I hope that I'm that active at Eastwood's age. I think it's great he's making all these films, and he's acting in front of the camera, but I just don't, given the trailer I've seen, and it looks good, I just don't see this as an awards worthy
yeah,
movie.
it's not an awards type film unless it were just completely unless the trailer is not completely selling this film like it ends up being.
It looks like comedy to me. Speaking of the running time, I understand that everything shrinks when you get older. So I think that Clint Eastwood's at an age now.
Isn't that already happening to you, Jamie? Or
yeah, Jamie, do you need Avodart?
Avodart? What is that?
Never mind, it's a drug.
Oh, is that a male enhancement drug?
No, it actually helps you piss, or it helps you not piss. When you...
helps you piss. Hey, I didn't get to say my joke earlier when Nicholas was talking about Gran Torino. I was saying, you know, when he said Gran Torino wasn't getting any, I was going to be yelling like Jamie on a Saturday night. Sorry,
yeah.
Go on.
Boy, I'm sorry we missed that one. Nicholas, yeah, I don't think Gran Torino has a shot. And you're rocking for Slumdog, and I think that will get some nominations in there. Do you think...
Sorry.
Go ahead, man. The biggest question mark is what?
My biggest question mark still remains Milk, believe it or not. I mean, it might be Gus Van Sant. There's a great cast behind it. But I'm my biggest fear is it probably won't be as good as it could be. You know, I think Gus Van Sant could
pull off...
winning movie, but then again, I could be wrong too.
I had that very same thought because Gus Van Sant of late he's disappointed me, but reading the reviews of this film,
yeah,
it sounds like it's come out exactly as I had hoped for.
Yeah.
A great trailer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
the early reviews I've read are extraordinary. I mean, I definitely think it's going to be a big Oscar contender, and if not the favorite.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Mickey Rourke for Best Actor. I think that will be the greatest.
Yeah, and I think they'll actually do that because I think it's been written about so much about, you know, his comeback, you know, that Oscar loves those moments. They love those kind of moments, you know, when something happens like that.
They love a comeback in that town.
Yeah, they do love a comeback. So, I mean, I could see him winning for that.
Well, my opinion with the wrestler is pretty iffy right now. I've been reading a lot of reviews. There was an Academy screening probably no more than maybe 2 nights ago, and I heard about 100 people walked out of it.
What, for Mill?
Yeah, no, for the wrestler.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
no,
I don't think the film is going to get nominated.
I think that the film is probably too slight. I think
the
performance is much bigger than the film, and those are the kind of performances that they love to reward. And add the comeback onto that, and the fact that Nicole Kidman won't be the only one on stage that looks like they have a disfigured face. I think that it's going to be going to Mickey Rourke.
Yeah, I mean, I bet the wrestler only gets that one nomination. I don't think he'll be nominated at all anywhere.
Don't forget about Marissa Tomei.
I think she might. You never know. But I think the thing from what I hear about Aronofsky is that there's none of his flourishes from his previous films are on display in this film.
Right, I heard the same thing.
Yeah.
I'll make two calls right here. The wrestler will get nominated for Mickey Rourke and probably will win. I think he'll be the last King of Scotland of this year, you know, when Foursquare for one and the movie got no other nomination. And I'm going to say it. I think Kate Winslet is going to win the Oscar for Best Actress. I think she will.
I hope so. She's up.
I'm with you on that, actually.
Yeah, she should have.
I wish for it, and I think she will.
I call it right here.
Yeah,
okay.
She's definitely her time.
Yeah.
She should have gotten it for Little Children. She was
staggeringly great movie. You want to hear a song for me? Here, let's time to play a little song for me.
Playing a song.
Beautiful.
Sounds like a bunch of monkeys
yesterday. All my troubles seem so far away. Now it looks as though they're here to stay. Yes. You had a little taste of Jamie singing there.
Oh, thank you. Can you put that up on YouTube, though? I want to see you singing that.
I don't have a video clip of me singing that. I just have audio.
Well, do a new performance, man. Everybody's been waiting for a new YouTube performance from you.
Right. I'll have to do that. That marks the first time I've ever played myself singing on the show. That's how fucking bored I am.
Why are you bored? Are you bored why are you bored?
Yeah, we're boring Jamie now.
I'm making
Nicholas
a joke. Nicholas
makes some bold predictions and it bores Jamie.
Yeah. Yeah. In the couple of minutes left, who do you think will host? Yeah, we'll do a round table.
Okay.
Hopes of hopes. Jason, who do you want to host?
Oh, who do I want to host?
Yeah.
Not who I predict will host.
Well, do both. I'm fine. Make it quick. We have 2 minutes left.
Oh, damn it. Okay, under pressure. I think it's going to be Ricky Gervais. I think, you know, there's been all this buzz that's been talked. He's been talked to that. I think he's confirmed that they, you know, they have talked to him. I think he's thinking about it. You know, I think I think they want to go with someone, again, that's kind of interesting and unique, you know, to excite the telecast. So I think he may get it. But I'll still go back to my standard bearer. I'd love to see Billy Crystal do it one more time.
Yeah. Jerry, how about you, man?
Oh, I'm just going to pick some. Rachel Maddow. No, I don't think that's a long shot. She's not going to do it. She's got her own stuff to do. I'd like to see Stephen Colbert actually do it.
Mm. Oh, interesting choice.
Yeah.
I just hope it's not Jon Stewart again.
Nicholas, what are your thoughts?
It's interesting because, you know, and I was reading something probably about 3 months ago where they were trying to get Justin Timberlake on, and you know what? I have to say, that would be an interesting host to get to a new demographic.
Oh,
but, you know what,
that would be a good choice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but you know what? I think, you know what, I'm actually going to side with Stephen Colbert. I think Stephen Colbert would actually be really, really funny, and I think, I mean, he's done it for once before, if I'm not mistaken, and I'm
the
just
Oscars.
Not...
Yeah.
No, and the Oscars.
Maybe Sarah Palin. She's not doing anything.
Yeah,
that's true. She's getting ready for 2012, you know.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, 2012, when the world ends.
Garney, what do you think? Who do you want to host?
I think Robert Downey Jr. would make a great host.
Oh, excellent choice.
Yeah.
But I think that
he killed at the AFI Awards. He was great.
Yeah, that would be good.
But Jason might be right about Ricky Gervais. I think that they, you know, they leaked that out just to see what the response would be, and it's been mostly positive.
Mm-hmm.
I think Justin Timberlake would be terrific. I think he's very funny, very charming. He's a great musician, a great entertainer. He has screwed all the hot women in the audience. But I do think that the Colbert particularly, I would definitely not be unhappy with, and Gervais would be a close second.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I'll
take Gervais too.
It's been a. This lady keeps saying, talking in my ear. It's been a Tamsin. Is that you? It's been a great show, guys. And I thank you for joining in on the fun.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, we will be back.
It felt like one of those CNN shows where there's too many heads.
You can never have too much head.
We
will be back Sunday night. We'll be back Sunday night with a great show. And then, Jason, you'll be on the air Monday at
for the big
anniversary show.
The two-year anniversary.
Yes, two-year anniversary.
Yeah,
absolutely. Speaking of things, Jason, am I invited to that show?
You have what?
Am I invited to that show, Jason?
You're always invited, Nicholas. Are you kidding me?
I just figured I'd have to clarify.
Oh, yeah, I want you to call in. I mean, I have little interview segments that I want to do for our you know,
wait,
our favorite
Jason,
listeners. So.
Is Jason conducting, like, the approval process on our show?
No, I'm talking about my show, not your show.
Never mind.
Yeah, Nicholas, you're, of course, invited. I want you to call
Nicholas,
in.
Yeah, Nicholas, you're always invited.
Okay, catch Barry Manilow tomorrow night on QVC. He'll be hawking his new CD.
And Dick Cheney will be on afterwards.
All right. You want to close on? Let's close on our closing music.
Oh yes, please. Not my trumpets.
No, not your trumpets. You already got them, ma'am. They don't play trumpets in hell. Let's see you back here.
Sunday show, but I'll catch you on long cars though.
You're not going to be
Monday
here Sunday?
Night, though, Nicholas.
I have to work Sunday, but I will catch you.
Oh, what good are you?
Okay.
What good are you?
All right, no, that's
Monday,
cool.
Monday
Nicholas,
night, Nicholas. Be there for the long haul. 8 p.m. Central.
All right.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, guys.
We'll see you next
good
time.
Good night, John Boy.